just to get back, and as you know, this year we'll be studying the Masechet Yevamos, and tomorrow we have the first Maamar Mekubalos with us, so I can just take the opportunity at the beginning of the year to thank Zev Berman, who really takes care of the website, I guess, and the recordings and the Maamar Mekubalos. So we'll thank you in advance, and we thank you for the past as well. And also just to thank Rabbi Hochberg and the community for hosting us. And special to thank Rabbi Arbisfeld, who's the organizer and coordinator and the Ruach HaChaim from the very beginning behind the shir. And, again, we don't take these things for granted, so just already, looking forward. Thank you, everybody. What? I mentioned already. And all the people, who contribute in different ways. So this year we'll be learning the Masechet Yevamos. Again, we'll have a break for those two shiurim before the Yomim Noraim. And the limud is a very challenging limud. One of the things I want to speak about tonight is why it's such a challenging limud, and I want to identify some of the areas and things that we should be thinking about going forward. We're, again, only going to have two shiurim, as it turns out, before we break, but we'll try to do the best we can with those two. Let me just say a little bit by way of introduction, just put a little bit of context in light of recent days on the limud of Masechet Yevamos. Masechet Yevamos is it's an old Masechta, I'm just being humorous, meaning it's not any older or younger than any of the other Masechtas, but it's an old concept which goes back not only to Matan Torah, but to prior to Matan Torah. As we know, the story, part of the Makoros that we have in front of you are two parshios. The parsha that we read last week's Parshas HaShavua, Parshas Kiseitse. It's not every week that we'll be discussing Parshas HaShavua, but this week we will. That's where the halachic material for Yibum and Chalitza surfaces. And at the same time, there's an earlier parsha in the Torah, and that's the parsha in Parshas Vayeshev, the story of Yehuda the Tamar. So already in the very beginning of Jewish history, the children of Yaakov, and already in Bereishis, so it's not only an old Masechta, but it's an old institution. One of the things that we want to look at is the interrelationship between Yibum Kodem Matan Torah and Yibum Lachar Matan Torah. I think that's a very important topic, not one which is so well known. Good to see you. And but my point in saying that this is an old institution, an old topic, is that while it's an old institution, an old topic, the themes of Yibum and Chalitza are as relevant today conceptually as they were from the very beginning. We don't really encounter so many cases of Yibum and Chalitza, and certainly of Yibum we almost never encounter anymore, because usually we opt the Zman HaZeh for a Chalitza. But nonetheless, the concept of Yibum, and therefore the need for Chalitza to neutralize Yibum, is an important concept. But just to highlight it, in the beginning of Parshas Kiseitse, the Torah speaks about the Parsha of Ben Sorer Moreh. And there's a debate in the Gemara and Sanhedrin, whether Ben Sorer or Moreh, maybe it's possible. One man Damar says, Lahoya v'lo Nibra, so why do we learn it till the Drosh v'Kabel? Same issue with regard to here. Nidachas, we find this several times. So what does it mean, Drosh v'Kabel Schar? So there are different interpretations that are given. Certainly the Rav understood. So what that means is that even if there's no individual, Ben Sora Mora, the concepts, the values that are reflected by Ben Sora Mora, those are things that are every bit as relevant on Halacha L'maisa as if there was a Ben Sora Mora. In other words, there are issues there about parental authority and about the deterrent and about Nidon Al Shem Sofo, which even if they're not going to be actually implementable, right, are nonetheless important. They're conceptually important for a committed Torah Jew to understand and to know. Actually, I always recall that Rabbi Arbisfeld, as you have a Yortzeit, right? Kiseitse? Yes, I remember one time in Kew Gardens, he spoke on Shalashidus, and then Sora more about the psychological aspect, which there were certain things there that very much struck me. Again, there's no Ben Sora more Elohim v'lo Nibra, but the you know, what kind of environment he comes from, his physical health, the relationship, or the kind of parental home that he comes from, the values, right, are every bit as important. And the same thing is true with Yibum v'chalitza, which is Hayav v'nivra, and can still happen. Even if there's no Yibum l'maisa, practically, b'zman hazeh, the concept of Yibum v'chalitza, even beyond the dinim of Yibum v'chalitza, is important. And particularly, I just wanted to bring it up just as a little akdama in the context of events of the last few days. I'll explain in a minute. Okay. Yeah.
If I could just ask about Ben Sora Mora, you say he always falls by Cholish Elo. And the highlight of Cholish Elo is always Tshuva. And here Ben Sora Mora goes against the grain of
I understand. So that's, again, I don't want to get so much into Ben Sora Mora, but this is like just to highlight, just to respond very, very briefly, if I just want to get too off topic. Everybody always discusses, the Mefarshim already discussed the relationship between the Din of Ben Sora Mora, which is a Nidon al Shem Sofo, right? He's a little boy, where we already see, what he's going to be, and we need to neutralize him. They contrast that always with, the principle of Yishmael, Basher Husham.
Right.
We knew it was going to happen, the Rebbe Shalom knew it was going to happen to Yishmael too. And nonetheless, Basher Husham, he was a little boy, and, we treated him, so what's the difference? So usually what we say is, that Yishmael was not incorrigible. We might know what's going to happen to him in the end, but at that point in time, his actions and even his personality didn't warrant looking in the crystal ball or acting on the basis of the crystal ball, which was available. And you have to let people make their own choices and play out what happens. The Ben Sora Mora, that's the whole point. He doesn't have the kind of Averin, he's a cotton, which per se is Mechayavin, but he already exhibits the characteristics of an incorrigible Avarian, who is a danger and who is really not capable of accomplishing a Tshuva. So, in the context of Tshuva, if you look at the Rambam Minuchas Tshuva, just as an example, sometimes the Rambam says, these are the Devarim Ha'aktim Nisat Tshuva. People who have these particular traits, it's not in the cards, they're not going to be able to do Tshuva. But Tshuva is a gift, and it requires also a certain kind of a personality and a certain kind of perspective. And the Ben Sora Mora is somebody, whether he did or didn't exist, who's adjudged, not to have the personality and the values, and he's already at a stage, not of Maisa Beira, but of Gavra, Rishis Agavra, right, which makes him appropriate to him. So that's the short answer. But getting back to Yibum v'Chalitza, so, last 2 days ago, was the 9/11, 10th anniversary. And I mentioned this to my shir as well in Yeshiva. So, if you listen to it or watch it, it was a very moving kind of a thing. And what really underlies the whole thing, I thought was very impressive, is people searching in a profound way, to memorialize, the legacy of people who died and weren't able because of the tragedy, were not capable of realizing their potential. And if you listen to the interviews and so on, just the reading of names, the making of a few of your personal comments, the touching of the etchings, in the stones. But, what that reflects, and then, combined with some of the interviews that what I heard, there's two things emerge. One is that people have an appreciation of Tzelem Elokim and Kedushas HaChayim, and realize that every individual is unique, and you have to do something, or whatever you can, to try to preserve the legacy of someone, I would say, who not just passed away, that's always sad, but especially somebody who was cut down in the prime of his life and whose potential, we feel he was robbed, of realizing his potential. It's very important, there's a certain urgency. People who have their own Tzelem Elokim, feel that, and that's very much consistent with the values that we cherish And there is that sense, trying to, satisfy families who endured this kind of a thing, and each of whom had a different conception, but, to try to make that, to accomplish that for them. So it's, on the one hand, memory and the, you might think, having your name etched in stone, so, what kind of nechama is that? But it is for people. Something they can touch, they can look at, they can, hearing your name, being able to make a comment or two, about someone who a loved one who perishes. In the interviews, people spoke about, I think, two interesting things. Number one is you want to preserve the values of that person. What are the things that he held dear? Now, in some cases, Bill loved to swim, so isn't it nice that there's a reflecting pool? Okay. And whatever makes the people, in other cases, it's something, much more serious. This person stood for chesed. This person stood for education. I want to make sure that his children, that I want to set up a fund. It's the preservation of memory by means of the continuity of the values that are associated, with that individual. That's number one. And the second one, which I thought was very striking, which stands out, is, what can we do for the dependents of this person? His uncle and his brother. What can we do for the widow? And what can we do for the orphans? Assuming the responsibility of somebody who perishes in that way, is another way to honor a memory. And since, I'm learning the Masechet Yevamos right now, so it just struck me that this is exactly what Yibum, is all about. What is the story of Yibum? We'll just sort of look at the Pesukim to begin with, and then I'll double back. But the story of Yibum is the story of someone whose life ended and whose potential was unrealized. Right? In other words, he died, and he didn't leave behind any physical legacy. He didn't have any children. And if you look at the Pesukim, which we're going to analyze closely, they're very fascinating Pesukim, the way they start off. I'll explain that in a couple of minutes, is fascinating. The language that's used, and also the interplay of different factors and different forces, which seem to be diverse, all of which apparently play some role, and one of the things we're up to try to figure out is what that role is and how it interacts. But part of that is the idea of memory alone, legacy, calling somebody by the name of the mace. We'll read the Pesukim in just a minute. What does that really mean? And there's a big Machlokas Rishonim. Is it only that? Is it Yerusha? And so on. But also trying to create an environment which continues, support for the spouse, number one, and which creates almost the equivalent of an heir. Not a biological heir. There's no DNA, from the mace. Try to simulate an environment which is as close as possible to the one, that would have been the environment of his child. And since that's the motivation, in part, that's why you're taking this very radical step. We'll talk about why it's radical in a moment. But that in itself is a very profound aspect of the legacy. This person's life and the values that he held dear are inspiring. That's part of Kriyas Hashem too. Right? Shmo Gorim. We say Shmo Gorim. Aside from any mystical meaning, what we mean is you name somebody after someone. It's because that person, his Dmus Vyukno, and what he stood for, is profoundly important in your life. And if you're every time you see, this child and you call him that name, it brings back, it resonates, this other person's life. So you're going to raise them in a certain way, and you're going to emphasize, certain values. So it's more than just a name, and it's more than just an environment. It ends up being a way of, A, taking care of the dependents, the people who lost out when this person's life was cut short, and at the very same time, as I say, the continuity of the values that this individual held dear. So Yibum is a real institution. They say it's an old Masechta, and it's an even older institution, in Parshas Ki Tzeitzeh and even earlier in Vayeshev. we don't encounter so much Yibum anymore. We do still have Chalitza. But nonetheless, the concept of Yibum and what it means is something which is of utmost relevance. And it's really a model. Again, we're not talking about a public, you know, or a multitude, you know, a tragedy like 9/11 or other calamities that have befallen the Klal Yisrael. But on an individual level, you're talking about, again, somebody whose life was taken in a way, you know, which is particularly tragic, and say which you know, which is cut short in that sense. And therefore, the model and the things that we emphasize are things that are very relevant, and their values which we can embrace. Then we can also understand the interplay and the complexity and the dynamic of different values, and that's one of the things that we're going to try to understand better. I just want to read the psukim just to highlight that in a minute, and then I'm going to get back to them. But it's just interesting to note.
Your life is cut short. You can have an old man who has that. You're taking the
yeah. And then more, I mean, no. Right.
Older.
Well, structurally, put it this way.
You're putting it in a very, to fit into a very fine system.
Well, I would say that the norm in Yibum is that the person, you know, dies young because he had to be somebody who had the capability of having children. Right. We'll discuss that. Now, if the person had the capability of having children to begin with, then there's no din of Yibum. So it has to be somebody who has that capability and who didn't have children. Now, you're right. It can be a situation where you live to, you know, 119 right. years. And in the life cycle, you never had children, and his 118-year-old wife, you know, will still be on medicine Yibum. But I don't think, you know, that that's the norm. I think the norm is that, you know, you're dealing with somebody who didn't father a child in the context of a marriage, probably, you know, because he died young. But it doesn't have to me, the issue isn't whether he died young or not. I think what I said was that he died with, you know, unrealized potential. As long as he had the potential to produce a child, and he didn't, it's still an unrealized.
May I ask you a Hashkafa question about that? Do we really believe Hashkafa was that when a person is dies, that their potential, everyone has a certain potential. If Yeshaya Navi died at a certain age, he accomplished tremendous.
No, it's wow. Indeed, right. So, yeah. So, but we still.
That's part of the form of life that you feel that a person has potential.
100%. But when Bain ain't low and there's no progeny whatsoever, the Torah itself sees that as a reason, right, to try to lahakim lahakim shame Israel. That has to mean something, right? So obviously the Torah itself in this particular case, normally I think you're right. But when it comes to the issue of the leaving that kind of a legacy, the Torah considers on some level that it's unfulfilled and that there's a pagam of some sort, and something that we try, that's the parsha of Yibum. When it comes to other accomplishments and other issues, and even this, I mean, there's no, you have to accept Ritzon Hashem. But that's what the parsha of Yibum is all about. So it's just very fascinating, just if you look at the Psukim just for a minute, and then we'll get back to them. Ki Yeshnu Achim Yachim, it's just very fascinating that the Torah begins the way it does. It's a very rare parsha to begin this way. And that Shechachma just points out that for other reasons, that, you know, you would have expected that the Torah would write this in a different way. But the Torah writes, Ki Yeshvu, Achin Yachtav, you know, when brothers live together, what does that mean? Umeis Echa Mehem Abein Eilo, Lotia Eshav Hameis, Hachutza Le'ishdar. It's just very, yeah, we'll discuss each part, but it's very striking language. You know, the introduction of Ki Yeshvu Achin Yachtav is strange. If you look at Rashi, Rashi explains, Ki Yeshvu Achin Yachtav, Shehoifalehem Yeshiva Achas Ba'olam. This is based on Gemara's and on the Sifrei. Prat Le'eshes Achid Shaloi Yabolam. This is to teach you that a brother who is born after the Yabam, after the Mace, has already died. They were never alive and never shared the same world as brothers, but they're children of the same father. In other words, after the Mace died, the father, you know, had another child. That's called Achiv Shelo Haya Ba'olam. Achiv Shelo Haya Ba'olam is a brother, right?
Yeah.
But he's not subject to Yibum. That's a special din. That's what Gemara says, and that's what Rashi's quoting here. That's based on the Limud, Ki Yeshvu Achim Yachtav, Piyashu Yachnachtav, and the other one is Pratla Eishas Achid Shalom Yamalamad. Yachtav is Hamyuchadim Benachla, Pratla Achid Benaim. It only applies to a brother from the father's side, not a brother from the mother's side, right? One who is included in the Parsha of Nachla. We'll have to discuss that as well. Yeah.
You didn't mention
the
Megillah Rus.
Megillah Surah is the third. It's not in the Torah. It's in,
right.
In the question is whether that is a parsha of Ebel or not.
Yeah, exactly.
The Ibn Ezra, which we'll get to, the Ibn Ezra in Parshas Kisei says, "Don't tell me about Parshas Ruth." The Ramban constantly, both in Vayeshev and in Kisei, the Ramban brings riots from Ruth and Boaz and the Goel. The Ibn Ezra. In Vayeshev, but especially in Kisei, which we have here, says the parsha of Rus is what he calls Geula, not Yibum. So we'll look at to it.
I was thinking of Nachum's response to fire sending away our plans.
We'll get to it. So the question is whether that was a Melitza of the Alma. The problem with that is two things. Number one, maybe this is why you're asking it. They would have been her children, not her husband's children, which is one of the points that the Rabbeinu Bechai makes, and it would have been La'achar. Yeah, so that Rabbeinu Bechai makes most of these points, and says that's how he knows that's Melitza B'Alma. She just said, not the Torah's evil. I would have married you to them, but it wouldn't have been the din of evil. And the Ibn Ezra thinks that that's part of the proof, that it's Geula and not evil. Okay, we'll hopefully we'll get to it. Anyway, I just want to point out the Pesukim, and then I'll get back to them. I say, but so we learned already from this the beginning, Ki Yeshu Achim Yachtav, two dinim. Number one, the father that the brother has to be alive together with the mace, and number two, that it has to be Achim Min Ha'av, who are royal Nachla. The question is, it's written in this remarkable way just to teach those two dinim, and there's no other way to teach those two dinim, or for the same reason that those two dinim are true, the Torah highlights it even more by formulating it in terms of Yeshiva Achim Yachtav. I'll explain what I mean going forward. Then even the continuation, Lotia Eishes Hameis Hachutza Izar is also strange. You can almost feel how cold and heartless it is. Woman, you don't want her to be Hachutza, right? Izar. You don't want her to be exiled to a stranger. Okay, this is of course the din of Shomeres Yavam, that a person, a woman who is Omedes Liibum, in other words, the husband had no children, there are brothers, her situation has not yet been resolved either by Yibum or Chalitza, she's called Shomeres Yavam, and she's Asura, she can't get involved with anyone else. But it's fascinating that the Torah describes it in this way, Eishes Hameis Achutza Liizar, and then the Torah says Yavama. The sister-in-law Yavo Aleha Ulekacha Isha VeYitma, also very strong Tzukim. We just don't know, like the word Yavama here, Yavama Yavo Aleha VeYitma, three times in the same pasuk. Mefarshim have interesting things to say about what Yavama Yavo Aleha means, and in between Ulekacha Isha, which sounds like Ishas, regular Ishas. The next pasuk again. Continues, V'hayah b'chor asher teled yakum al shem achiv ameis b'lo yimachesh shemo b'Yisrael. Now the Chazal have a big discussion in Sefrei already and in the Gemara, and then the Mepharshim discuss it. Who is this b'chor? It says, V'hayah b'chor asher teled, the b'chor who is born, he yakum al shem achiv ameis. He'll stand in, right, for the unrealized potential of his brother. Oh, of his mace, I'm sorry. The lo yimachash shemo Yisrael. And therefore the name of this mace will not be blotted out. So if you look at Rashi, again, just very quickly, Rashi says, Lohaya b'chor gadol ha'achim hu miyabe mosa. This is, again, one view in the Sifrei and one day in the Gemara, which is that the Hoya ha'b'chor here is a reference to the oldest brother. And the oldest brother will stand in for the mace, because he takes over his marriage, in some respect. The simple reading of the Pasuk is not that way. The Gemara says this, and the Ramban and others point this out. Afikte, kra mipashte, that the simple pshat is that the child, the first child that is born of this union between the brother and the sister-in-law, former sister-in-law, right, will be, that first child will be al shem hames. He'll be the child that the mace never had. So it's fascinating that the pshat goes one way, and Chazal take it a different way. And one of the things we're going to try to explain is how both of these things could be true. V'im lo yachpo tzayish lakachas v'chivemto v'olz v'chivemto ha'sha'ara l'zakenin v'amra me'en yivami l'akim l'achiv shem b'Yisrael. Once again, this is a formulation we had previously. Lo yimacher mi'Yisrael yakum al shem achiv. Here it's me'en yivami, my brother-in-law refuses l'akim l'achiv shem b'Yisrael, right, to raise up the name of his deceased brother b'Yisrael. Lo ava yavmi, he refuses to do yibum. And then v'karol zikne ira, very fascinating, this is already chalitza, somehow the zikne ira are involved in all this, right, the dibru I love, the amad v'amar lochachat v'tachta, the nikshe yivemto I love, leinei ha'zakeinim, the chol tzanalo me'al raglo, the yarka v'fodi, they have the chalitza sanal, and the yarka v'fonot, she spits, the ansa v'amra, kacha yaseh le'ish asher lo yibaneh, that's based on here. Here's another formulation, right, lo yimacher, yakum al shimo, Lakim Lachit Shem, and now we have Lo Yibaneh as Beis Achiv, will not build his brother's house. V'nikros Shemo B'Yisrael Beis Kalutana. This is a very incredibly challenging parsha, and one which I say emphasizes several things. It emphasizes again some sort of the relationship between the brothers is important. It has to be brother for the father. It has to be brother who is alive at the time of the mace. We need to understand that better. I hope to get back to that towards the end today. The ach, who is the yavam, is also called the b'char, which is fascinating. And that's one aspect. The other aspect is the focus on the isha, right? The fact that lotia esh hames achutza liyizar, and the use of these terms which imply that her well-being and the continuity of her life is a factor, right? So it's the relationship of the brothers, it's the fate of the wife, and of course the third very dominant one is the three or four different ways that the Torah chooses to underscore, again, is this legacy issue of a child, right? Livno's bias, which may not be a child, but maybe, certainly l'hakim, shame, and what do you call it? Shalobi Machos Shemo, all of these various things. Okay, so we need to understand what the interrelationship is between the various components. Before I do that, I just want to take a step back for a minute and just discuss the Masechta a little bit, which I think will lead back to where we began. The second Yevamos has a reputation for being a difficult Masechta. Okay. Indeed, the Meiri in his Hakdama to Pirshei Mishnayos generally discusses the same question that other Rishonim discuss. The Tosfos Yeshanim asked the question already. If you look here on Daf Beis Amud Aleph, if you look on the left, the Tosfos Yeshanim, right, Tosfos Yeshanim asked the question. Right? He asks an organizational question. Right? How come Masechet Yevamos is the first Masechta in Nashim? So the Tosfos Yeshanim himself, let's look at this more for another minute. And this is what Tosfos and Moed Katan on Chaf Cheslin Beis says as well. First answer explains the Adrabah, right? Part of the question. Ha'ilahatu kiddushin uksuvos v'gitin v'achakach yivamos v'nira v'shim v'tzivah haya emunos yitecha chosin yishuos amur yitecha z'seder moed chosin z'seder nashim kem seder nashim u'basar z'seder moed. Right, first comes nashim, then comes moed. The Messiah b'mesechet Moed Katan, there are two versions of the Seder HaMishnayos. We have the one that ends with Kagiga, but some of the Rishonim had that Moed Katan is the last Masechta in Moed. That's obviously what these Bali Tosfos had. So if Moed Katan is the end of Moed, so then the Havat Purinusa, it's Abel, right? Avelus v'kach hitzkel seder nashim b'masechet Yevamos u'masmich Purinusa the Purinusa. So can I read about Perakash Shatim u'masmich v'lochem v'sofei Purinus v'yirmiya dekulei Purinus? That's one of his answers. Inami mefarish tchila ezo isha asura ve'ezo isha muteres v'hada mefarish kula mili v'nashim. I have to explain that. Or maybe because Yevamos begins with Arayos, right, who is prohibited. So before you get to the Ishus, you know, who you can marry, it's important to know who you can't marry. Oh, that's a very strange beginning. If you look at the first Mishnah here, the Mishnah says, Chamesh Nashim, Chamesh Yisrei Nashim, Potos Tzarsem, 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 and Achalitzim, and Ayibum, Ad Sofa Ola. And it's not a beginning where we would think that the Mishnah should begin, which is that there's a mitzvah called Yibum, the relationship between Yibum and Chalitza, the Dinam of Yibum. The Mishnah begins with the exceptions, when there's no din of Yibum and Chalitza. That is, if the Yavama, if the sister-in-law, has an erva status vis-a-vis the Yavam. Right, let's say the Yavam's, let's say the sister-in-law is also, this gets why it gets a little complicated and it's got in a minute, the sister-in-law is also his daughter. Right, or his mother. Right, let's say he and his brother are from different mothers. His brother married, sounds pretty bad, his brother married his mother. Could such a thing happen? He didn't tell her it could happen. Or his mother-in-law. So then, what happens? The brother dies, right? And now, the mother, who's a sister-in-law, is a candidate for Yibam. Obviously, he can't have Yibam with his mother. So the Mishnah says that if it's, these are the lists. Elohim, Bito is daughter, Bas Bito is granddaughter, Bas Bino is granddaughter from his son, Bas Ishto, right, his wife's daughter, not his daughter, but in other words, his stepdaughter, Bas Bino, Bas Bito, Chamoso, his mother-in-law, Eim Chamoso, Eim Chamiv, Chachoso, Meimo, the whole list of people who are, if they happen to be the Yivama, they're Ptura, Mina Yibam, also Mina Chalitza, that's a bigger Kiddush, except it can't be Yibam, we understand. Why shouldn't it at least be a requirement of Chalitza? We'll discuss that. And not only that, but two other Chidushim, let's say in the olden days, when a person could marry more than one wife, before Cherem Reveni Gershon, so let's say he had several wives, the mates. Now he dies, he leaves several wives, right? Now, one of the wives is his daughter, or his mother, or his mother-in-law. But one of these is Erva. So we would have thought, and by the way, this is the view of Beis Shammai, we would have thought, the one who's an Erva is out. She's not a candidate for evil, but the other ones are a candidate for Yibum or Chalitza. Beis Hillel, this Mishnah is telling us that's not true. If there, any one of the wives is an Erva, then the Tzara's Erva, Tzara means a rival, the co-wife, right? So the rival wife, right? The maids had three wives. The other two are Rechokos there. Doesn't matter. They are also Turos, Mina Yibum, Mina Chalitza. It's called Tzara's Erva. Not only that, but even Tzara Meola, this gets a little more complicated. What happens is, he had two brothers. Right? The first brother died and left and several wives. Right? And he left the several brothers. He had several brothers. So one of the brothers marries not the wife that was an erva for them all, but the one who wasn't. Let's say none of them were an erva to that other brother, right? Because otherwise it would be Tzara's erva. So he marries one of them, then he dies. That's called Tzara's Tzara. In other words, he also leaves three or four wives. His other wives, but he has one of his wives, is a Tzara's erva, not the erva. Not the mother, the mother-in-law, the daughter, the granddaughter, who is an erva. Just have to think of the case. Don't think about it too hard. It's basically, you know, pretty clear. So that's called Tzara's Tzara, as long as we have to explain why it's so. But Tzara's Tzara, Ad Sofa Olam, everybody's a Patur from Yibam. That's the beginning of the Masechet Yevamos. So there are two questions, really. So the Tosfos Shanim's second answer is, since we're listing all the Ervas, and then the next Mishnah in this lists even other Ervas, the Erva listing the you know, who's off limits is a good way to start yeshivas. Not so sure why that's true. I'm not so sure why it's a good way to start yibum either. Remember, it's strange because, again, we're not starting with dine yibum. We're starting with the exception to yibum. I'm going to suggest something else, not today, but going forward, which would be a different answer to this question. Yeah, that's the second answer of the Tosfos Shanim. The third answer of the Tosfos Shanim is the Ode Shlomar, Mishum Dehi Mitzvah Rishona She'ira B'Nashim, K'nasiv B'Tamar Ba El Eisha Sachicha B'Abeimosa. When Yehuda said to Onan, the brother of Er, Er married Tamar, he died, right? And then Yehuda said to Onan, his brother, do Yibum on Tamar. That's the first time that we encounter a Chobas Isha in Ishus in the Torah, says Yishanim. So that's why Ishus begins with Yibum. That's interesting too. The Meiri gives a different answer. Well, there are two Meiris. So the Meiri in Yibamos actually says, it's not true. In his Seder of things, Yibamo wasn't the first in Sachdan Nashim. Okay. That's true, then there's no question. Or any other different list, Kedusha and Ksuvas, and so on and forth. In the beginning of Pirush HaMishnayos, the Meiri gives a different answer. Or right, there he acknowledges that many people have, you know, the list that Yibamos is the beginning of Nashim. So he says, so why do we begin with Yibamos? It's pretty strange. One would think that you should begin with other things. Rambam, by the way, also asks this question. So Rambam in Pirush HaMishnayos, which I hope we'll discuss, and they also, in the beginning of the Zakhtama to Pirush HaMishnayos, says, we begin with Yibum because Yibum is the only Ishus where there's Kfiyah. Kfiyah, where it's compulsory. It's, you can coerce the... In other words, he's obligated to do either Yibum or Chalitza. You're not obligated, you're in the mitzvah to get married, or when you get married, to get married, Bederech Kiddushin, according to my reading of the Rambam, but there's no one can put a gun to your head and force you to get married. No one can put a gun to your head and force you to get divorced. Right? But Beis Din can force you, right, not to leave her in a state of Zika in limbo. Beis Din can force you to implement either Yibum or Chalitza. The Rambam says, that's why we begin Nashim with Yibum. I don't know why Kfiya is Zafka a good place to begin Seder. A Seder, that still requires a Seder. That's what I'm... Anyways, the Meiri, in the beginning of this Perish Mishnah, says, we begin with Yibamos because it's the most difficult Masech. The most difficult of the Masech is in Nashim. It gets also interesting, you know. Do you begin with the most difficult? You know, that's like a major psychological, you know, psychologists will tell you, I don't know if we have any here, but I don't know if they'll really tell you this or not, but I imagine they'll tell you. Like, there are two types of people. You know, there are people who want to get the difficulties out of the way first, you know, so they can, you know, coast, you know, from there, or they can meet that challenge and know they, you know, overcome, you know, and the rest is, and there are those who like to put off the difficult things as much as possible. So I guess the Meiri was from the, you know, we embrace a challenge school. So,
Hakal, Hakal, Tefila?
What? Hakal, Hakal, Tefila. I think that's a different meaning, but I hear. So the Meiri basically acknowledges the difficulty of Masechet Yibamos. Why is Yibamos so... I'm going to suggest a different reason why Yibamos is the beginning of Nashim. This is just background. But again, I want to go back to Pesukim and finish my Akdama, then I'll get back to why I think Yibamos is really the perfect beginning of Nashim. So why is Yibamos so different? So I think that there are really three reasons. Two of which are mostly technical, and the third, which is a part of our a real part of our Haggadah. The technical reason is, number one, the Masechta is very spread out, or the dinim of Yibum and the halachos of Yibum, understanding the intricate aspects of Yibum, is spread out almost more so than any other limud. Mostly, you know, you have like, sections. In Kiddushin, right, you have the first 13, 14 dapim, you know, deal with, you know, Kiddushin, beginning is Kiddushin Kesef, then you have a little Shtar, then you have Kiddushin Bia, then you have Eved Ivri, then you have Eved Kedani, and there's a certain, you have pockets, you have 5 blot here, 10 blot there, 12 blot here, right, you have the topics. Of course, there's always overlap, but by and large, the topics are manageable. They're manageable, discrete units. Even Gittin, the whole Masechta is about the Gittin, but it's about different aspects of Gittin. Again, we learned a few years ago, Gittin, beginning is the fun and after fun and next them. Then you have Dine Ksivas Haget. You know, then you have Dine Lishma. Then you have Shlichus Beget. Right, there's a certain pattern in Gittin. And so on. Yevamos is incredibly complexly spread out. The first 50, 60 dapim, you know, keep coming back to different aspects and keep revising our perspective on certain aspects of Yibum, and particularly what we call Zika, meaning that limbo status that a Yevama, that a sister-in-law who loses her husband when he has no children, has before her status is resolved, before Yibum Mechalitza. What exactly is Yibum? What exactly is Zika? How are you put to Zika? What are the implications of Zika? It's just incredibly spread out. That's number one. Number two, the cases in Yibum, we can already tell from the first Mishnah, and this is, you know, easy. Now they have charts in the back of some of these Gemaras. It's good to have access to. But the cases are incredibly complex. Now the reason the cases are complex is not a coincidence. We're dealing with a very nuanced, you know, kind of halakha, an institution, right? So in order to, again, the halakha is case law, right? You need the cases in order to highlight and to isolate one factor from another factor, and you know, you have to be creative and imaginative. How are you going to figure out whether this or that? Let's figure out there'll be a case, right? Well, we have factor A, we don't have factor B. Now, if you're dealing with most topics, it's not so difficult to invent cases that are going to highlight what you need. However, if you're dealing with Yibum, right, and especially the interrelationship of possibly multiple brothers, multiple widows, right, so then the only case in some, you know, the only way that you can isolate factors is to have incredibly complicated cases. So it's not unusual in the Masechta Yevamos, you just look at the Mishnayos, you just have to look at the Mishnayos. The Gemara, you know, makes it more complicated, but you had four brothers, two of whom were married to sisters, because two brothers can marry two different sisters, right? Two of whom were not married to sisters, right? And then, you know, they died, the brothers without children died in all sorts of different sequences. The issue being, don't worry about the case in a moment. The issue being that if two sisters from at the same time, you know, cannot be omdos leibum because you can't marry two sisters. It's called achos zekukaso. But the only way you're going to get that case or cases and the order, let's say it happened simultaneously, let's say it happened in this order, let's say first there was a, you know, a non-sister pair, you know, who was omedes leibum, is if you have five brothers dying in different sequences, married to all sorts of configurations of the wives who are or aren't related or turn out to be related, and so on. In other words, you have to, the cases are by definition going to be incredibly complicated in order to accomplish the goal of cases of law to isolate the factors. And the famous comment, you know, of the Baal Chobos HaLevavos, or Bach Ibn Pekuda, in his introduction. So he, you know, he wrote this work called Chobos HaLevavos, a philosophical work about how, in addition to the Chobos HaIvarim, every Jew is obligated to do mitzvos. But in addition to that, he's supposed to have the right to hashkafa. That's called Chobos HaLevavos. So when he wants to underscore how important it is, you know, to think about you know, Torah values and Torah issues in the proper way, in addition to being a proper executor and implementer of the mitzvos and the halakos of the Torah, so the Chobos HaLevavos, you know, has at one point makes a comment which I, first time I read it, was very disturbed by, and you know, now I have a different read on, which I'm going to share with you. He says, you know, does it make sense that there are people who are spending all their time calculating combinations and configurations of Yibum v'Chalitza, but they don't really understand the Cholos HaLevavos. Okay, so why that originally disturbed me, being a confirmed halachist and the Talmud of a Rebbe who believes that not only is the halacha the central aspect of Yadus, but it's the foundation of Jewish values as well. The Rav's biggest chiddush in Hashkafa and in philosophy is the idea that the halacha itself represents the Jewish value system in a way that that is absolutely indispensable. So somebody shouldn't be poking, or making fun of, or mocking, or downplaying what we call Havayos Dabaya Barava, certainly not to somebody like the Cholos HaLevavos, who is such a mainstream and accepted figure. What do you mean to belittle, the creative configuration of Yibum V'Chalitza? That's part of the halacha, right? That's Havayos Dabaya Barava. So when I first read that comment, I wasn't so happy about it. But then it occurred to me that the Cholos HaLevavos didn't mean, the Mishnayos and the Gemara. He didn't mean the cases which highlight, one factor and isolate it from another. And I think this is part of people's dilemma or the challenge, when you learn Maseches Yevamos. You can get a little caught up either on the Yiyush level, in terms of becoming discouraged, or if you're good at it, you have a certain kind of a mathematical or mechanical, kind of a mind. So then, you can get caught up in the cases in their own right. Ah, I'll go one better. And what if his grandmother's cousin's uncle, first married the brother and then, somebody died. But, they did a chalitza right before they died.
It's a math course called permutations and combinations.
There you go. So I think what I'm trying to say is the permutations and combinations which contribute to our conceptual understanding of the intricate concepts of Yibum v'Chalitza are Havayas Havayas Rav. And the way to look at them is not to get caught up in, you have to figure out the cases, but you have to know that they're a tool. Right? So you can't get too excited about it. As long as you get the idea, it's fine. You should know, if somebody says to you, well, explain exactly the case, you should be able to do it. But in some cases, if you don't do it, but you can do it, and you're getting the conceptual part of it, there's no reason to be discouraged or disillusioned. When you start making up permutations and combinations, as a skill, and it doesn't have any toeles, that's not Havayas Havayas Barava. So there, the competition with Cholos HaLevavos, goes in favor of the Cholos HaLevavos. That's my take on Cholos HaLevavos. So the second factor is basically the complex use of cases, which I think just because you're dealing with such a nuanced, set of circumstances, you're just involved in cases that are far more complex on average and on a regular basis than almost any other part of Ch'as. And that's just, you should be aware of it so you can overcome it. Really. The third aspect, and this is where the Hakdama comes back, is that Yibum is an inherently complex institution, one which challenges our understanding of other aspects of Ishus and of Erva. And that's already what we call substantive complexity, as opposed to the complexity of cases or of proofs. And let me just say, I want to identify a couple of areas which we should just be aware of, again, sensitized and advanced, forewarned is sometimes, foresensitized in terms of understanding and appreciating as well. And this goes back to the Pesukim. It's already very much in the Pesukim itself. I just want to identify, I'd say, certain areas. The first, of course, is the concept of Zika itself. The idea of limbo. Limbo is by nature, by its essence, a complex and a nuanced category. Something that is in between one thing and another. This man died, right? And she's now Shomeres Yavam. She has Zika to the brother, who she's not related to. Whom she's related to is a brother-in-law, a sister-in-law, but who she's not married to. Now, the Gemara itself discusses Yesh Zika, Ein Zika. There's a big machlokas Rishonim. What does Yesh Zika mean and what does Ein Zika mean? That's already a quadruple complexity. But just to understand what we're talking about. Is how much along the line, to what extent is she still Aishas Hanes? Right? The questions are clear. To what extent is she already partially Aishas Ha'ach? Right? Along that line. The Mishnah in Masachet Kiddushin, which we have here in our sheets in the very end, on the Beis Amid Aleph, tells us the second to last piece. Ha'isha, this is the beginning of the Masachet Kiddushin. Ha'isha nikras v'gimel drachin, konas asum v'shtei drachin. Nikras v'kesef v'shtar v'biyah. Right? We know this, so I'm going to run over quickly. Kiddushin has three methods. Kesef, shtar, and biyah. The kesef, v'shamei, omer, medinam, shavadin, v'etzilam, pruta, shav. Not a topic. Kami, pruta, echav, v'shmur, v'itzor, etal. Fine, this is where we get to us. The konas atzma, right, she acquires her independence from Ishras. The get to the Misa Sabal. So normally, Misa Sabal is the termination of a marriage. Right? One of the parties is gone. Right? Hayivama nicknames the Bia, the Konas Matzah, the Chalitza, the Misa Sayava. The point is, Gibom Zika defies the din of Konas Matzah, the Misa Sabal. Right? The husband died. Because he is childless, by the way, she could have children, right? But because he's childless, right, whether he's 119 or whether he's, unfortunately younger, but because he's childless, so the din of Konas Atzma Misa Bal doesn't apply. That's an amazing idea. That's complex. Right? So, again, Yei Zika or Ein Zika, what does each one mean? How far from the mace, how close to the brother? The Rambam likes the formulation that Yibum, that Zika and Yibum is Hikna Lo Min HaShemayim. It's based on a Gemara, but the Rambam likes it and he amplifies it. Right, there are others who see the, you know, this is a Hemshech Ishus Hameis when it happens, and maybe even before it happens. And others who see it that the context is Zika, but we're dealing with Ishus Shalach. You can imagine this is a very big issue and a very big Machlokas. In general, we say Kona Fatma Bisa Sabah. So there's a discussion in the Rishonim, not so much the Shalim, the Farshim bring it out. What do we mean by that? So the simple reading is, you know, if one of the parties is no longer alive, the marriage is over. There is some evidence that we view Misa Sabah like a get, a matir. Meaning, and Ishus doesn't end. It's such a close bond. The chalos of Ishus doesn't end even in death, except that death is a matir. The Trumas Hadeshin made famous this discussion about Eishes Eliyahu Anavi. Right, Eliyahu Anavi didn't die, but you know he stopped being alive. Right, he was Ola L'Rakia. So what about Mrs. Eliyahu? Right, when we say the Konas Atzma Misa Sabal, she's not around. He's not around anymore. Right, and that's because he's coming back, but everybody's coming back, so that's not. Yes, a Mason isn't a reason, right? So this is the Trumas Hadeshin discussion. Kovitz Yurin had picked up on it many years after that. Even get, right? We say Rashi explains in get la kamisa, very famous Rashi in Gittin, seems to say, oh, because no shlichus, right? How are you going to? He can't give the get because he's no longer alive. Somebody's going to give it for him, but ain't king, no one can give it because in get la kamisa, there's no shlichus. So the Bali Tosis says, ask, and Tosis quotes it. They say, what do you mean Ein Shlichus? Forget about Ein Shlichus. There's no marriage anymore. Right? Ein Get LaChamisa, because there's no marriage. Again, it's exactly this question in a way. You know, is marriage such a powerful thing, right, that on some level, whatever we mean by it, but you need a mat here. This affects the end of Yibamos. Again, the 9/11 is anniversary is relevant to this as well. The whole end of the Masechta is about Aguna, right? And what it takes to establish someone as an almana. Erecha b'misa sabal. In my opinion, some of the discussions of Erecha b'misa sabal highlight this question, especially the role of Bezdin being not here. Be'erecha b'misa sabal. Namely, it isn't when you look at the Eidos on Mises Chabal, so is it Eidos on a fact, right, a reality? And once, of course, there's Mises Chabal, there's no marriage, because there's no one of the parties for the marriage is gone. It takes two to be in a marriage. Or, the idea is that Mises Chabal is a matir of the marriage. And so basically, the Ein Echad, right, is being made, not only on the mace, right, but on the termination of the marriage. That will determine, in part, how we understand the role of Beis Din, whether this is based on, you know, things like Milsa Davidu Ligluye, or, you know, Idecha Nem and Bisurim type halakos, etc. Well, what does that do with us? My point is, if you take the view that once there's Mises Chabal, there's no marriage, right? So Yibum is a huge contradiction to that. There's no marriage, so what are we talking about? Then you have to look at Yibum, right, in a certain sense, not as a continuation of the Ishus of the mace, because the Ishus of the mace is gone, right? But rather, as something else after, if the husband dies, you know, without leaving Zera, so his family, or the brother, right, they have a chiyuv to do something for her, to make sure she's not hachutza, she's not lishzar. I think that's part of Piyeshvu Achim Yachdav. I'm not going to get to develop it now fully, but I think it becomes a family responsibility. So basically, the zika, from that point of view, is created by the chiyuv yibum. Not that there's a zika, and yibum is meant to address the yibum. The zika is a result of the chiyuv in the yibum. You have chiyuv towards her to make sure she, as a vulnerable, you know, part of his life, you know, that to safeguard her future, right, under these conditions. The question is why, what does his having a child or not have to do with that? I'll try to explain something about that, not today. But the point is that chiyuv is what creates zika. If, on the other hand, you take the view that Mises Chabal is a matir, and so then you might say, well, Mises Chabal is a matir when there are children. When there's no children, right, then there's still some aspect of the issues. Some aspect. We don't, obviously, it's not a full marriage, but the point is, then you can look at zika not as something created by the chiyuv yibum, but maybe the opposite. Yibum is a response to the remnants of this marriage. For example, the Sfarnu has a wonderful formulation, both in Kitetze and in Vayeshev. Let's look at it for just a minute, where he says that we're dealing with the erusin of the mace in the context of Yibum. If you look here at not page one, not the Sfarnu on the bottom, the next one, the beginning of page two. Eloyim Acheshem Omi Yisrael Shehaya Havlad Nechshav Eitol Hashem Yisala Kiyum Piri of Arivila Meis Shari Nolad Al Yedei Kiddushav Shel Meis Ve'en Ayavam Tzarech L'Kadsha Kiddushin Acherim V'zeh Mas Onan B'sinaso Es Hachiv U'b'zos Hayalav Katzef. The Sfarnu is a very nice formulation that the Erusin of the Meis still continues L'Gabe V'Yavam, not the Nisuin, but the Erusin. Fascinating. And that's what he has in the next one as well. Kochei yaseh liyishe shen liyibanez beis achiv. Ra'ui hu lazeh habizayon. Macha shalocha peitz lashin binyan abayis. Sheit kelivnos achiv b'kidusha. Tamara. Again, from Gemara's main point in this direction. I'm just limiting to the parshanut right now. Lo karasi liyishe lebeis. And he says the same thing in Vayesha. My point is that depending on how you look at Mises Chabal generally, depending on how you look at the different perspectives on Zika, either way, Yibum is an inherently complex, nuanced institution. Right? It defies Mises Chabal. It implies that somehow the issues continue for Achar Misa in some way, or at least that there are obligations to, family obligations to your sister-in-law, La Achar Misa. And surely all of that is extremely challenging. The relationship to Meis, to Ach, to Hikno, Lemina Shemayim, and of a different perspective. The status of Shomer is Yavam, as I mentioned before, she's not an Eishes Ish. There's no Chiv Misa, she violates. There's either a Lav or an Asay. There's a debate in the Gemara in Yavamos, of Tzadi Beis, on the Beis, whether there's Tfisat Kedushin for Shomer is Yavam, whether there's Mamzer, if she violates and has a child. You can see that all of this is all about the Zika. Right? It's all about this in-between status. so that's one whole area of concern. The second one, I just want to identify these briefly, and then we'll pick up with this next time, is to, or part of this system before I get to the second one, is also just to figure out when her shame yavama ends. Right? At what point does she stop being the sister-in-law, the wife of his deceased brother, in the case of a real yibum, and start being his wife? Right? The Torah says, yavamo yavo aleha, right? Ulekacha lo leisha v'yibma. So, if you look again at the Sfarno, fascinating Sfarno, and the Chizkuni, it's really Bali Tosas ala Torah, v'yibma, the first one, the bottom of page, line 28 on page 1, v'yibma, yasir osa miyos o givimto, avotia ki isha l'chol davar afil l'garsha beget l'anzim. Another fascinating formulation, which we find a number of Mepharshim, the Chizkuni says it even more strongly. If you look on the next page, line 15, and it's also the Chizkuni and the Sfarno in Bereishis, in Bereishis, the Yidma mitevo sheish bo shnei panim b'peirushan, ze l'mafreya mizeh, ke'ein deshem l'dashno u'kiyotzeben, pirush yaber b'yaser ayibum v'tia ki'ishta. What does it mean? Let me explain. The Yonah ibn Janak, who is one of the addictive people, I don't usually read his Sefer Sharashim, but I've seen it quoted in this context, and the Ibn Ezra has this view as well. That Yavamo Yavo Aleha, right? Lukaka Lisha V'yibma. Your sister-in-law, what are you supposed to do in this circumstance with your sister-in-law? You're supposed to marry her. You're supposed to do Yibam so she can become your wife. That's a simple chat. Right? Yavamo. Right? She's your sister-in-law. Under these conditions, the proper thing is Yavo Aleha. Right? Lukaka Lisha V'yibma. The Sfarnu and the earlier, the Chizkuni, the Bali Tosas, the Sfarnu, they don't like that chat. Why? What bothered them? Clearly what bothered them is she's a sister-in-law. Right? There's an Isser
There's an Isser Hesh Ach.
How he died. But there's an Isser Hesh Ach anyway, even though come up. If there wasn't a situation of evil, it would be a severe violation of Isser Hesh Ach. So I mean, Yibamo, Yavo, Aleha. So that's what motivated them. That's what the Chizkuni and the Sfarno and the Tosas mean. They say, oh, it's an opposite. Sometimes you have a word, and the verb form of the word means the opposite of the word. Meaning, expel that previous category. The Mesalik, Yivama, she's your sister-in-law. What are you supposed to do? You're supposed to neutralize that, make her not your sister-in-law as quickly as possible. Yavala l'kacham al-isha b'yivma. Make her your wife, not your sister-in-law. What do we have here? An amazing, and I think this is very critical throughout all of Yibum and Yibamas, right? An amazing tension, right? Yibum is a violation of their status of sister-in-law, right? Because of the urgency of la'akim, shame, la'akim, etc., and it's an exception to all of that, and it's in conflict with. Or, if you look at the bigger picture, and given the circumstances, even though there's an Isser Hesh Ach under one set of circumstances, in a case where there are no children, and it's Lachim Lachim Shem, and it's Eshet Hameis, Hachutza, Lizar, so then, no, it's Petoras, your sister-in-law. It's your obligation to your brother. What would have been a rivalry, and a terrible Isser, in this circumstance, is a Chesed, and a Kiyum, in her being Yavama. That's very complicated. There's like two perspectives of Yibum. Yibum is a fulfillment of her status of Yavama. Yibum putting her status of Yavama as far behind you as possible. And it reflects in general. Yibum is an exception and a competition to the categories of Ishus and Kedushas, Ishus and Erva, or it's a recasting and an internal aspect. This highlights the next theme. Also part of the identified complex aspect of Yibum. And that, of course, is the Isser of Eshes Ach. Right? Normally, this isn't just not a Chiyuv, it's an Isser Chamor, Eshes Ach. What happened to the Isser of Eshes Ach? And why is Eshes Ach different than other Erevah? Right. Misha says that if it was your mother, or your mother-in-law, right, or your daughter-in-law, you know, etc., who happened to be married to your brother, who now becomes a candidate for Yibum, right? Not only is there no Yibum, there's no Chalitza either. And not only is there no Yibum and Chalitza, even the rival connected wives, right? Ad Sofa Kola Olam, they're also out. But not Eishes Ach. So is that just because that's what Yibum is?
That's what it is.
Right. Or is it deeper than that? So this is the famous discussion, which we'll get to at the right time, is Yibum what we call Hutra or Dechuya? And in a way, parallels what I just talked about in the linguistic question of Yavama or Yavo Alao, right? To make her not a Yavama, or this is the key of Yavama, right? So some Rishonim say, it's Ase Dokolos Ase, there's nothing you can do about it, that's what Yibum is. And you can understand if that's what it is, that you want to limit it as much as possible. You want to say, oh, let's make her my wife and forget about that she's my sister-in-law. It's connected, the issues. It doesn't have to be, but they conceptually are. Or no. There's a famous Sifrei, also in Parshas Kisei, say earlier, and Rashi quotes this in the Aseret HaDibros, right? You know, Shomer V'Zachar V'Dibarechad. Mechaleh Mos Yumas, and Shneik Vasim B'nei Shana Tilimim, bring a korban on Shabbos, right? V'Dibarechad Nevar. Well, Shomer V'Zachar is really V'Dibarechad Nevar, right? But we already see what's going on here, right? The, you know, G'dilim Tasa L'Kot Tzitzes, and Shatnez V'Dibarechad Nevar, Yibum and the Easter of Eishes Ach the Dibur Echad Nemru. The Nitziv interprets this a little differently, but the simple shot of the Zifrei, this isn't just Ase Dokolos Ase. This is what we call Hutra. When you have the circumstances of Yibum, right, it's not that, oh, the urgency of Lahakim Lahakim Shem or Shalotia, you know, Hakutza Lizar overrides. That's not the way that we look at it. Under these conditions, there is no Isser in the mitzvah. That's a very complicated idea, though. To what extent is Isser Eishes Ach lurking anytime you can't implement Yibum perfectly? So it's Eishes Ach or not? That's the second question. What happens to the regular din of Isser Eishes Ach? The third question, I'm sorry.
Something that the Mishnah category, with the 15 categories, cuts against that.
So why?
I mean, it's saying all the other relations.
Yeah, so we want to know, is that just because it's just a definitional, but the idea is the same, or are we saying that this is fundamentally different? And what about Pre-Matan Torah, you know, with Yehuda and Tamar, and, you know, and so on? That's going to be an issue too, which we'll get to. The third one is the Vlad. What do we mean when we say, I'm just going to give you one more minute, what do we mean when we say Yakum al Shem Achiv Ames? How literally do we take that? Again, the man is dead. There's no DNA. Right? Well, what does it mean? So the Gemara says that it refers to Nachla. Rashi in Perish Allah Torah, in Vayeshev, and the Ibn Ezra say it refers to Kriya Shem. The Ramban, again, we'll see all of this. The Ramban says, Kriya Shem, who cares about that? That's superficial. Obviously, for Rashi and Ibn Ezra, it wasn't superficial. The way Rashi and Ibn Ezra understand the Erev Onan, Onan said, I'm not giving you my brother's name. Right. Ramban says, anybody would want to give a brother a name? What's the harm in that? Ramban thinks it's Gilgul Neshamas, which is normally, Ramban usually keeps his Kabbalah to Kabbalah. Right here, in this sugya, Ramban, Rabbi Mechai, if you understand, here the Kabbalah is for them is Pshat. It's a very powerful issue. There's a mystical aspect of Lahakim Lahakim Shem, right, which is not something I can talk about too much. There's a symbolic, memorialized, what we talked about earlier. There's a lot in a name, and in the inspiration that goes along with the name. Right? Maybe you don't need the name for that. Maybe it's the environment of Shamtur Fal Hirsch. I saw this week Parsha. I thought of it before, and I have other eyes for it. But this idea, again, the closest relative and in simulated environment is always going to be a brother. See, he says it. He doesn't have one word of mysticism. Kedarko. You know, confirmed rationalist. You're simulating, my words, the closest environment and inspiration, you know, for this child to be a legacy of the mace. But the Sparno, as I mentioned before, this child is produced from the Arison of the mace. And others will say even more from the Isis of the mace. What I'm trying to say is, there are different levels of understanding. What do we mean when we say, right, all the way from getting it's a memorial and it's more extraneous, you know, to Gilgul Neshamos and saying on some level this is this child. And Miktsaso or Rubo? Even that debate. What do we mean when we speak about a child who's connected to another marriage? Finally, two more points to look for. Very briefly. One, what is the relationship between Yibum and Kedushin and Nisuin? Right? Yavo Alehu Lekacha Lo Leisha B'Yidma. There's a big discussion in the Rishonim. What is the relationship between the mitzvah of Yibum and the accompanying kinyan of Yibum? Can you have one without the other? Which one is Ikar? Are there two dinim? And is Yibum something that fits into Erisin and Nisuin, one or the other? Or is it a different kalos? It's something called Yibum. And Yibum is just different. We'll leave the details for another time. That's a very important issue. That's complicated. What is Yibum vis-a-vis the other issues? And finally, you almost never have what you have in Yibum, which is an option of Yibum or Chalitza. And we need to understand what that relationship is. Gemara says that Kol she'ena ola le'ibum ena ola le'chalitza. What does that mean? On the one hand, Yibum and Chalitza are opposites. Most Rishonim count them separately in mitzvos. From Sajagon counts, and Rivash considers this as well, counts them as one.
Not everyone holds Chalitza as a mitzvah also.
Not everyone holds Chalitza as a mitzvah. The Monei mitzvos may think it's a matir, so what is it really even a mitzvah? But even a minyan mitzvah themselves, from Sajagon and Rivash consider one, others count them as two. So number one, call it Echeno Olivum and Olivum Chalitza. What does it mean? What is the scope? Number two, conceptually, are they one or two in Minyan and Mitzvahs, etc.? Number three, the conditions that apply to one compared to the other, adjusted for the fact that one is incoming and the other is an exit. One is a breakup and the other of the Zika, the other is the fulfillment of the Zika. For example, do you need Kavanah? Do you need Eidekiyum? All of these questions make Yibum and others a very complicated topic. So we'll continue next week. I want to go back to Tzukim and start developing some of the ideas, and then we'll move on.